The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step 3, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step 4, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Done fell right down that rabbit hole, so reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja.
Hey guys, it's Jerry from Hillbilly Horror Stories. You know we always try to turn you guys on to the best paranormal podcasts out there. With that said, do you like stories of the strange, the weird, and the unexplained? Then we want you to check out Jim Harold's Campfire. It's definitely one of the best paranormal podcasts out there, and it's on the top of my favorites list. What makes it so great? It's that the concept is pretty simple. Jim just talks to regular people like you and me. They talk about all the strange stuff that happens to them for 90 minutes every week. He doesn't exaggerate or play a lot of spooky music. The stories speak for themselves. These stories cover everything from ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, and some head-scratchers. For example, there's a story involving serial killer Ted Bundy. There's also a story about an alien abduction that may have been by a reptilian. And there's one young man who encountered an eight-legged demon. That's right, an eight-legged demon. Now, not all these stories are horrifying. Some are heartwarming, like a visit from a past loved one or a peaceful near-death experience, perhaps. I was lucky enough to share my heartwarming story about two bikers who delivered a message to me from my passed-on mother. These stories are true and fascinating and told by ordinary people who've had extraordinary experiences. Tune in to Jim Harold's Campfire on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Trust me, it's going to be your new favorite. Hey guys, welcome to episode 292 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy?
Yes?
What a week. It's been a long week.
Been
a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Funerals and visitations and parties. We had some fun stuff go on.
We did. But yeah, I'm about done with the funerals. Yeah. It's just too many in a week.
All right. Obviously, we want to start off by thanking all of our military, civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Special thoughts and prayers to the people of the Ukraine and everything that's going on over there. And hopefully that just doesn't turn out to be a bigger situation than it already is, because it's already a horrible situation. But hopefully it doesn't turn into World War III, basically. So
yeah, I hope not. We're praying for all the soldiers, and, you know, I just can't imagine. I just can't. It's just really heartbreaking to see this happen. And, you know, our prayers are with all of you guys. Please stay as safe as you can, and we love you.
Hey, Tracy, it seems like a broken record, and it really is sad that it just continues to happen. But it's been another week of people contacting us because of struggles that they're having in their daily life. And you feel sorry for everybody that's going through that, because you know, for everybody that contacts us or contacts the group, there's thousands more who don't contact anybody.
Right.
And I just want to make sure that I say this as much as I possibly can. Do not think that your friends, neighbors, and loved ones always have this, as far as can handle what's going on in their life. Reach out to your loved ones if you think that they may be struggling. Just ever so often, send a message, make a phone call, and just check. See how you're doing. See how their mental state is without, you know, you don't have to obviously ask that, but just check and see if they need somebody to talk to if you know that they've had issues in the past.
Yeah. I'm going to share a little quick story. I bought a shirt, and I know y'all probably saw Kristen's shirt, and I got one, and it says, "Dear person behind me, the world is a better place with you in it. Love the person in front of you." I just love that shirt. I wore it for the first time the other day, and I came out of a store, and there was this lady, young lady there, and she was talking about my hair at first. She's like, "Oh, your hair is so cool." And I was like, "Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it." And as I turned to walk to get my car, she said, "Ma'am." And I said, "Yes." And she said, "I don't know if God wanted me to see you today," she said, "but I just read the back of your shirt, and I needed that so much today. You don't even know." And, I mean, I just teared up, because just the littlest things, like that saying on the back of my shirt, somebody noticed it, and somebody actually said something to me, you know, how that she really needed to see that today. So, it's the simplest, littlest things that really can make a person's day, help them. You know what I'm saying? So it made my whole day, because she was a sweetheart. But, it's, you know, the story is, just reach out, because you never know what little word you say. I don't care if it's, "Hey, beautiful, hope you have a great day." I don't care what it is. It will turn their day around.
I was listening, I know, just on that same situation, I was listening to the lead singer for Shinedown, Brent Smith, I think is his name. But he wrote a song called 45.
That's a good song.
But he said that song is based off a situation to where he went to a friend's house and knocked on his bedroom door. And his friend ended up, you know, coming out, talking to him, and they left. And then years later, he found out that his friend was actually in there contemplating suicide and had a gun.
Oh my gosh.
But whatever he said at that time coaxed his friend to not do it. And he didn't know that that's what he was
doing. He didn't know what
he was
going
to
do.
So but he found out later that whatever he said, just him coming there and saying whatever, was what he needed to hear at that exact second.
Yeah. He was put there at that right time to do that. And it's just amazing.
But regardless, the whole point is just, you know, we met up with some friends of Tracy's last night, and one of her friends and I had a mutual friend that committed suicide 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. She was one of the sweetest people you'd ever meet in your life, but had a very troubled life. And it just sucks to lose people that we don't need to lose.
No, it's correct.
It's just been weighing on my mind all night and all day. So I just want to make sure that people know don't wait for somebody to call you. If you know somebody's struggling, just keep in contact with them.
I mean, yeah. I mean, if you even have like a inkling or anything that like, you know, something just don't seem right, you know, just reach out. I mean, that is probably going to mean the most to them anyway. Cause, you know, they know at least you're reaching out and you care about them and stuff like that. It doesn't take but a second.
But if you guys would rather talk to somebody other than us and you want to talk to somebody in a group or you just want that extra support, please join our Facebook group. And if you'd rather contact somebody more anonymous, Tracy, what can they do?
They can call 1-800-273-8255. You can also text them at 741-741. We love y'all. Please reach out to us.
All right. So, Tracy, we got a fun episode tonight. And a little later tonight, we've got the guys on from Ghost in the Night podcast.
Nice.
And so we got a fun little talk with them, and they got some stories for us. So that just hang on for that a little bit later. So, Tracy, we did an episode a few years ago on haunted objects, and then we did another episode on cursed objects. Last week, we did the story on a cursed object, the Egyptian bone. Which, yeah. I kind of giggle when I hear that name. I don't know if I named it that. Anyways. So we've actually had a few people write us and request that we do more stories like that. So this episode will be some shorter stories. It's three stories altogether on haunted objects. And I'm going to be honest with you. The first two are a tad bit of a stretch. But the people who tell the story or you know, made the story known, they feel like the objects were haunted. So therefore, who am I to argue?
Exactly.
But you're going to see when I get into it why I say it's a tad bit of a stretch. Now, these first two, I doubt that anybody's heard before. But the third one might be one that some people have heard of. So I took it upon myself to try to find some of these stories that were lesser known, because I thought it'd be more fun if we didn't just rehash the same old cursed objects or haunted objects, I should say. I have learned that there is a kind of a fine line between haunted and cursed objects. Some could almost be both, or hard to determine if it's cursed or haunted. And I think the big difference is, does the object bring on bad luck or death?
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, it's more cursed.
Yeah.
Or if somebody actually put a curse
on it, yeah.
On it, and they say, well, you know, I cursed the land. If you, you know, it's different. They actually put a curse on it, so it's, you know, proof there. So the Egyptian bone, obviously, I put in a cursed category because they took it, and then all this bad luck happened.
Yeah.
For basically their whole life. James Dean's car. Obviously, because every part of that car that ended up somewhere else, that person wrecked or was killed or something. So I could see all that had it. Now, tonight, we're going to discuss objects that I put in the haunted category, not cursed, which is more strange things happen to that person or in the home. So, makes sense? Like yep. Poltergeist activity or something. What if we start with a sad story
about
a haunted photograph?
Oh.
This story goes back to October 2012, and it's in Winchester, Virginia. Todd and Teresa Apple, they felt that their daughter was trying to communicate with them through her picture. Their daughter, Veronica, sadly had passed away at the age of 3.5 years old. She had some surgical complications due to congenital heart defects. She passed away on August 16th, 1997, at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland. Now, her death was unexpected. This was, not that any surgery is routine,
yeah.
But this was supposed to be a routine surgery. In fact, the doctors actually informed the family just the day before her death that she was improving, and they hoped to move her out of the ICU and into a private room by the weekend.
Wow. Sorry, Ninja, calm down over there.
But the hospital missed a fatal infection that started in the catheter line and she died of Pseudomonas septis.
Oh, poor baby.
Tom Teresa said that they don't even know how they made it the trip home. It was one of those deals where you just zone. They said it was about a 75-mile drive, and they don't remember any second of it because they were in shock, basically. They made a few calls when they got home to some friends and family, and then they sat down on the entryway steps of their foyer. They knew that there would be family coming in, but most of them would be coming cross-country from California, so they would have several hours before anybody would arrive. Now, at this time, the before-mentioned picture of Veronica was hanging on the landing to the upstairs level of their home. The family said that there were three strange things that happened in a very short period of time. The first thing that happened may have been the weirdest of all of them. It had to do with the actual picture. Teresa and Todd swear that they both looked over at the picture and they could see Veronica's lips moving in the picture. Neither could make out what she was saying, but they knew that she was trying to communicate with them.
No.
Now, before you say, well, I mean, I'm sure you could glance over, maybe see something, maybe it was a trick of the light. They were aware that they were in shock and exhausted themselves, but they were convinced they saw this. One of the things was, they were not overly emotional people. They're really level-headed. But the key to this, it continued for about 30 minutes. So it wasn't a glance over and we thought this was like they literally watched this for 30 minutes of the lips moving on this picture. And they were the only two people in the room.
Did they go pick the picture up?
No. They said the odd thing was, another odd thing, was that the phone never rang during this entire 30 minutes that they were watching this. And that was odd because before this and after that, the phone pretty much rang off the hook with people who were finding out and calling for their condolences and family members that they had called and returned calls. So they just thought it was odd that just for that 30 minutes, it was like they had a moment of peace from the phone to be able to concentrate. The phenomena stopped when the two decided to walk down to the store that was about a half a mile away and get some laundry detergent. The second thing that happened was after they got back from the store. So they were outside sitting on the front porch and a blue jay showed up right in front of them. The bird's color was almost identical to the denim dress that Veronica was wearing in the picture. Aww. This is why I say some of this might be a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
Because the bird shouldn't have anything to do with the picture.
All right.
Okay. But anyways, what made this odd is the couple had seen plenty of cardinals in the area, but they had never seen a blue jay before today.
Oh.
It hopped right in front of them and came extremely close before it flew off. And because the color was the same as the color in the picture of the dress, they felt like that was there. Now, the third event that happened, it happened the day that they buried Veronica. Veronica loved water, and she was always asking for water. She just couldn't get enough drinking, it was. Not like in a pool, but she's always wanting to drink water. Now, unfortunately, due to her medications that she was taking, she wasn't always able to have water whenever she wanted it. At the time of her burial, there had been a long dry spell, and they were on the verge of a drought in Virginia at that time. But on the day of the burial, as Teresa and Todd stood alone at the gravesite, it started raining, even though there was no rain in the forecast. That was the third and final thing. So like I said, those two things didn't really have anything to do with the picture.
Yeah, but still, but the first I can thing see what did, they even...
So it almost, you almost couldn't count that as a haunted object.
No.
But I like the story.
I do too. I think that's very sweet.
There have been no other activity with the picture since the funeral, But the family still thinks that she used that picture to say her goodbyes.
Oh, my gosh. That makes me want to cry. That's so sweet.
Aww. All right. Again, this next one is a tad bit of a stretch. But I think you'll see where we're going at it. Probably I wouldn't even really count this as a haunted object. But you'll see where it ties in. It's a haunted trunk.
Okay.
This story takes place in Ontario, Canada. Brian McCavanaugh, he lived in an old Victorian-style house that was split right down the middle. So they had two families in there. He lived on one side, another family lived on the other side. Actually, it was he and his wife. They lived in the one. And the woman named Helen lived on the other side. She was actually an older woman. She was a widow.
Mm-hmm.
Helen made the best dumplings. And
a girl.
His wife and her sister would often go over there and partake in these dumplings and have these long talks with Helen. So this old Victorian house, it also had a big garage that was big enough for both tenants to share.
Mm-hmm.
The garage had a giant wooden door that you had to kind of walk up and lift up yourself. It didn't have the
automatic door opener.
It was more like a just flip it up.
Yeah.
So they would do that. And Brian had a Cadillac at the time. And in those days, he would pull in and Helen's car would be on the other side. But in between the two cars was an old style sea trunk. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
This was Helen's trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the type that had like the big latch that went down on the front. And the trunk, like I said, belonged to Helen. And Helen had told him that it was a keepsake from when she moved to Canada from her whole land of Portugal. So she just basically kept, I guess that's what she put her stuff in when she moved, you know, years and years and years ago.
Yeah.
And so she just held on to it. So at this point of the story, it was wintertime. Very cold winter up in Canada. Brian's wife and her sister mentioned to him that they hadn't seen Helen for a while, nor had they seen her little dog. Now, it had been at least a week. So they noticed that her bedroom window was also just slightly open, cracked. So he's like, well, I mean, maybe she took a trip to Florida, which she would do on occasion. You know, it was cold. And he said she probably just left the window open to let a little fresh air in there and circulate while she was gone. He assumed that she would be back. Well, that didn't suit his wife. And she got really agitated. He said she got in his face and said, Helen is in trouble and she needs our help.
Whoa.
And he was like, okay, how do you know this? And she's like, I don't know. I just do. But she said, something's overcoming me and telling me.
Well, especially, I mean, I don't know if they saw each other on a regular basis. You would think they would. But I would think so. I could see that, how she would be worried.
So the next week, Brian went to work as usual. He came in and he had a routine. When he would pull into the garage, he would get out of his car. He would go sit on that trunk and he would smoke while he took off his snow boots. And then he would go into the house. Well, this one day he's sitting there and he's just kind of decompressing a little bit, you know, thinking about what's went on today and all that. And he's playing with the latch. It's a broken latch on there, so it wouldn't lock or anything. Mm-hmm. He's flipping the latch back and forth, playing it as he's just thinking about what he's got going on. He said he'd been tempted many times to look into the trunk, but it wasn't his and it would be disrespectful, so he didn't. But he said on this day, which was the last day of the work week, he just had an overwhelming sensation to look. He didn't. So the next day, I said it was the last day of the work week, but it wasn't. The next day was the last day of the work week. He's pulling in up this narrow alley that leads to the garage. And he noticed there's a bunch of cops there. And they kind of stop him and won't let him proceed with his car. So he parks his car and he walks up to the house because he was almost to the house. It's like a little. As he's walking up to the garage, he notices that it was blocked off by police as well. The police were pulling garbage bags out of that trunk. So, he looks over and he sees the police questioning his wife. His wife had actually called the police because she was concerned about Helen.
Yeah.
And she had a nagging voice telling her that something was wrong. She didn't know what else to do, so she called the police. Brian said that he knew that something was up, but it didn't really click to him that a voice in his head was always telling him to open that trunk. It turns out Helen had been killed by a man that she had been dating over a financial dispute. And he had killed her dog and left it in the basement. Then he chopped up Helen's body.
Shut up.
In the top bathroom tub, put her remains in garbage bags and in the trunk in the garage where she was frozen because it was so cold and the garage wasn't heated. He then stole a bunch of money from her and her jewels, but he was caught before he could make it out of the country because Brian's wife contacted the police.
Good.
So they were able to figure out, I guess because they knew who her boyfriend was or whatever the deal was, probably easily traced.
No more dumplings.
I'm glad that's what you got out of that. The police were curious how Brian's wife was so certain that Helen was in trouble. And they typically don't take ESP or just had a feeling as acceptable answers. But in the end, they thanked her because her calling and the tips are what they were able to use to catch Helen's killer.
Oh my gosh, that's a horrible story.
So Helen's cries for help were actually coming from the trunk.
Ooh, and he was sitting on that trunk like that.
He was sitting on that trunk playing and all that. So again, you can see why I don't necessarily count that as a haunted trunk.
Yeah.
But Helen's body was in there, so that was probably more Helen coming from the trunk than it was a haunted trunk. But the family felt like it was the trunk that was haunted.
Oh my gosh.
But if nothing happened before that and nothing happened after that, it really wasn't the trunk, it was Helen.
How sad is that for Helen?
Yeah, that's very sad.
Oh my gosh. I just don't understand how people can chop up bodies like that. What the flip, man?
I don't know. I guess at some point, if you're the type of person that could actually kill somebody, then the next step probably is like, well, I've already went this far.
But what an idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, they eventually would have known it was him, I would think.
Yeah, why would you leave it on? Well, I guess he figured he'd be out of the country before they caught him.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, he's going to figure who's going to open that case. I mean, that trunk.
Yeah.
It's not going to be Helen. Mm. She's the only one that would have.
And a doggy. I'm sorry. That's so sad.
It is sad.
Man.
All right, this one's quick. This one, this next one. There's actually four stories now. So three, I think, but there's four. Mm. Some people swear by dumpster diving.
Don't they, though?
Yep. And you may think twice, though, after this story. In February 2013, an antique walnut-framed mirror was sold on eBay. But before it was put up for auction, the previous owner was allegedly attacked by paranormal forces. Originally, a group of men, I think there was three of them, they got the mirror from the landlord's trash just months before. They put it up in their house, and then the men started having very bad luck. Financial losses, illnesses, feelings of dread and doom, all since they brought the mirror into their house. In an interview with a British newspaper, the Daily Mail, Joseph Birch described waking up with stabbing pains throughout his entire body. He said that when he would go past the mirror, he would see flickering shadows in it. He would stand completely still and they would continue, but he would also get quick glimpses of darkness. He ended up selling the mirror for $155. And they didn't have any problems after the mirror was gone, and they don't know if the current owner had any problems or not.
Well, since you said that, then quit bringing crap in from the house that you find on the street. Take that tree right back down to the neighbor.
That ficus is a $200 tree.
Well, it don't matter. If it's haunted, we don't want it.
Well, I don't think... I've never heard of the haunted plant.
Never know.
Except that one on Little Shop of Horrors. All right, Tracy. So, moving on.
Dang.
I don't think we could have this episode without talking about at least one haunted doll.
Well, you know.
And if it's a good story if you can hear it over top of Ninja.
Oh, that's true.
He's extremely loud tonight.
I don't know.
All right. Some of the most well-known haunted dolls are in museums.
Yeah.
Two of the biggest being Annabelle and Robert the Doll. That doesn't mean, though, that this doll hasn't at least caused its share of havoc. So, Tracy, have you ever heard of Mandy the Broken Face Doll?
No, I have not.
Big shock. Oh. Mandy's real name is Marianda, but it's better known as Mandy.
Have you heard of it before now?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because you used to play with dolls when you were a kid?
Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do my homework and mm-hmm. actually read on paranormal stuff and don't watch TV all the time.
Sure.
This doll is at the, and I didn't look up the pronunciation, so I hope I don't screw this up. It looks like the Kasnal and District Museum and Archive in British Columbia. She was given to the museum by her owner in 1991 and given to the curator at the time, Ruth Stubbs. The doll was donated by the owner because she felt like that the museum could actually better care for the 1920s era porcelain doll. The doll had belonged to her grandmother. But the owner didn't want her own daughter to have the doll and play with it because it was starting to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and one other small reason. It seemed that since she had gotten the doll, strange things started happening at her home.
Like what?
Windows would open by themselves. And these were windows that were literally closed just minutes before.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would suddenly be open. That wasn't the weirdest thing, though. She started hearing a baby cry in her basement area. Whenever she would go to check it out, see what was crying or what was making the noise, she would only find yet another open window. So Stubbs recalls that she was a little bit uneasy about accepting the doll in the first place. When you think about it, museums in general can be spooky places. They have tons of a history that are attached to everything that's in there. Most curators, they don't like to talk about any of the artifacts in the museum as being haunted or possessed. But hey, sometimes strange things happen at night after the doors are closed to the public.
Oh, I'm sure. Can you imagine what goes on in there at night?
Yeah, because I saw that museum movie with Robin Williams.
Oh.
Was that A Night at the Museum?
Yeah.
Now, this case would be no different than like Robert the Doll and some of the others where stuff goes on afterwards. So let's talk about the doll itself. Her soft part of her body, because you know how porcelain dolls are. They mm-hmm. got the porcelain hands and head and feet yeah. and everything else is soft. The soft part of her body and the dress, they said, was filthy. The museum staff was kind of used to getting items that needed cleaning or repair, so that part was no big deal. The real problem here was Mandy's face. Large cracks scarred her facial features. They ran from the temple to across her eye and her cheek. It looked more like an abused doll rather than a cherished heirloom. Surely the doll was once beautiful, but now it was definitely showing her age with flaking paint, cracks, and bulging eyes. This kind of gave Mandy an ominous look. A photographer that worked at the museum took several pictures one day. Of course, these pictures were from all kinds of different angles and positions. The photographer and her boyfriend both said that they felt completely uncomfortable whenever that doll was in the room, but they couldn't quite put their finger on why.
I wonder if she did duck lips when they took her picture.
The next day, they walked into their photo lab to find pens and pencils scattered all over the floor, as if a small child had had a temper tantrum. The photographer then reported that there was a very loud sigh right behind her in the photo lab.
Sigh?
Yeah.
Oh.
She also jumped on one occasion when something fell off of a shelf that was untouched. Apparently, like Robert, Mandy doesn't like getting her picture taken either.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she's got a cracked face. I mean, come on.
Other staff had problems as well. There's probably a filter to fix that now. Other staff had problems as well. Office supplies would go missing. Footsteps would echo in the building when nobody else was around. And all of these things happened after Mandy arrived. Now, originally, Mandy didn't have a permanent display area, so they made a makeshift case, and they put her right at the entrance, because that's what you want. Every visitor was greeted by that off-putting face, aww, Mandy. And not surprisingly, many of the patrons reported feeling like her eyes followed them all around the museum. Some claim that the doll's head and the fingers would even move. Some noticed that the doll even blinked. Mandy was later moved to a different part of the museum. She had her own little spot back there, but it was not around other dolls because the staff was actually afraid that she would hurt the other dolls.
Oh my gosh.
Mandy has been blamed for a rash of missing artifacts in the museum and a few lunches that tended to turn up elsewhere in the museum. Is it your chicken sandwich? Ruth Stubbs decided that she was going to contact the donor after all these things happened, and she learned that after donating Mandy, the woman never heard the baby crying, and she never had another open window in the house.
Oh my gosh, that's creepy.
So what do you think the odds are that this woman had all these problems in her house, she donates it, the problems go away, and then there's all these problems in the museum, and they didn't know that the doll had, they didn't know any of the backstory at the time.
That sounds legit to me. I don't know.
I guess they did kind of know the backstory.
Well, I was going to say, yeah. Surely they had to know something.
Yeah, because they told her, she did mention that the windows and the baby
crying. Yeah.
So.
I mean, maybe it was just their imagination.
Could be, but I doubt it. Imagination doesn't knock stuff off of shelves.
That's true.
And it doesn't scatter pins and stuff all over the place. And how are you just going to burp and act like you didn't?
I'm sorry. I thought you would just go over, not mention it. But of course, you threw me under the bus.
All right. We're going to take a quick sponsor break and be back with the guys from Ghost in the Night podcast. These guys are fun. You're going to like this. And other stuff.
No, I don't like that.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
All right, guys, quick housekeeping. It's almost March, so we only have like a month and a half before our Louisville show, and tickets have picked up immensely in the past week and a half.
It's because I finally took my Christmas tree down.
That's probably what it is. So anyways, it's going to be us, guys from Brohio, and Justin from Mysterious Circumstances, all in Louisville in April. It's going to be a blast, and you guys need to come. So go to hillbillyhorrorstories.com, get your tickets there. You don't want to miss this one, trust me. It's always fun, and I may have a special guest. We'll see.
Very nice.
A good special guest. So
what are you saying?
I'm not saying anything.
But what are you saying?
I'm saying
that all of us are not good enough.
I'm not saying that, but I might have a surprise guest.
Yeah.
So anyways, and then also we're getting ready to have, if you're a Patreon supporter, we're having our listener stories episode, and we're going to have Brendan Shea on there.
Nice.
Telling some stories. And Brendan and his lovely partner, Annie Weebs.
Love her.
Will be joining us. They are the host of Serial Spirit. They'll join us in West Virginia at the Old Hospital on College Hill for our anniversary show in August. Tickets are available for that. There's only 60 tickets available for that one.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have already sold, so there's not that many left. That one's going to come with a tour.
Nice.
And speaking of which, Bobby Mackey's is in October. That one also comes with a tour. And this will probably be the last year we do Bobby Mackey's.
Oh.
Because if we move to Florida, then we're not going to be around here to do it.
Oh.
So probably going to be the last one we do at Bobby Mackey's. And then we got our Indianapolis show. So.
Yeah, yay.
So, anyways, I want to mention the cruise because people are still buying tickets for the cruise. I got a message the other day about people still buying tickets for the cruise.
Very good.
It's not too late. Jump on board. Literally. It's going to be fun. And all the information for the cruise is on our website as well. HillbillyHorrorStories.com has a whole tab of nothing but cruise information.
How fun is it going to have to, I mean, well, let me try that again. How fun is it going to be to have all our best friends
there
all
together?
There
were so many
together.
People, so many listeners that we've never had an opportunity to meet are coming on this cruise.
I'm so excited, you guys. We're going to party. We're going to drink. Go to the casino.
I'm not doing any of that.
Well, then that's why I'm the fun person. So y'all can hang with me. Yay, yay.
Anyways, it's been a good week for reviews and for Patreon. What do you got going on, Trace?
All right. For our reviews this week, we have Gypsy Moon, Randy Gilson, Amy Jeeps, Ashley Netson. Is that how, I don't know. Is that how you say it? I always afraid I'm going to say that wrong. Mojo Lobster, Toe Girl, and Donna. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much for your reviews. We appreciate y'all so much.
And I got, we didn't say this probably since last week, but those reviews help us so much.
They do. They really do.
So we definitely appreciate, especially like Mojo Lobster that leaves a review.
Every week. God love you.
And Kevin Cummins, he leaves one about every month. He updates it. It puts us up behind the scene stuff here. It puts us up higher in the rankings, which means more people see us, like iTunes and some of the other places, Stitcher and all that. They put up under the suggested podcast more when we get more reviews, which means more people see it. And in the end, that's how we make money, is how many people listen to the show. So just leaving a review can actually help us on our journey.
Yes. So. But your reviews mean the world to us, and it really, really makes us happy and glad that you guys like us and enjoy us. And we love y'all for that. Our Patreons this week is J.D. Thumper, Emily Lee, and Christian Laboda. Thank you guys for your support. It's amazing. We can't thank you enough for that.
Yeah, we don't mention Patreon very often because we don't want to feel like that we're taking advantage of people. But we don't want to feel like that we're just trying to, you know, use you guys as cash cows.
No.
That's not the intention. But if you don't like the commercials and stuff, for $1 a month, you can literally get all the shows ad-free plus some bonus stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't like the commercials, you can get them for as little as $1 a month.
Yeah. There's a lot of crap out there. So.
Yeah. And you get a bunch of bonus stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for $15 a month, which is the highest tier, you get 24 short bonus episodes and you get 2 full-length bonus episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty good. And all the ad-free shows. Anyways, go check it out.
Yeah. We really appreciate you guys so much. And we just, to this day, can't believe that you guys are still hanging with us like that. And man, it's just, we are so blessed and can't thank you enough.
No, 100% agree. Thank you so much. All right, Tracy, let's listen to the guys from Ghost in the Night.
Let's do it.
Hey guys, I'm excited to bring you our next guest. I've got Phil and Travis from Ghost in the Night. They are a podcast that deals with a little bit of true crime, a little bit of paranormal, and a whole bunch of dick and fart jokes. So it just really depends on what you like, but it covers all the gamut. These guys are super fun to listen to. They do their podcast live on YouTube, so you can catch them live, or you can catch them on your favorite podcast app. So Phil, Travis, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Phil, you've been doing this for a little bit longer than Travis. You added Travis here recently. Tell me a little bit about the actual podcast, Ghost in the Night. If I was to tune in and I'd never heard the show, how would you describe it? What am I going to get?
Ghost of the Night, originally it came out just paranormal, UFO, cryptid, anything supernatural is what I wanted to cover. And I wanted to go out and experience those things. And it comes from a personal standpoint. You know, I had experiences when I was younger and up until 2018, really, in those homes. And it provoked me to actually start the podcast. Now, things got a little bit, I don't want to say boring, but things, I wanted to expand a little bit and have a little bit more fun. So I brought Travis in back in almost about a year ago.
Yeah, I think it was March of last year.
Yeah, March of 2021 to kind of spice it up and talk a little bit, open the door a little bit more to the true crime and more of the, we don't do a lot of conspiracy, but I wanted to incorporate true crime into the paranormal because anybody that's covered true crime also knows there's a lot of occult stuff going on in the true crime world. And, you know, we kind of focus on that a little bit more, but we've covered everybody so far or plan to cover a lot more. But it's basically a podcast with a little bit of true crime, but with a paranormal baseline is how I like to put it.
Travis, when you got the offer to come in and do the podcast, what did you think? Is this something you'd ever done before? Or was this new to you?
I've never done the closest thing I'd ever done to this is, you know, when I was a kid, like 16, 17 years old, the only recording I've ever done is like, I cut a couple demos with bands back in the day. I've never done anything with microphones, none of that. All I knew how to do as far as recording stuff was go into a room and beat on drums. But, you know, I love podcasts. Like I love music and I listen to less music than I do podcasts at this point. Just because I say all the time, as corny and almost douchey as it might be, it's almost like music has always been there. Music, it's kind of like in my soul, if you will. So it's like I've always got music in my head. So now I listen to podcasts just because if I'm at work or something like that, it just passes time.
Well, it's kind of a funny story how you came on the show.
Because we were getting drunk.
We were getting drunk. And we started talking about the paranormal. And he said something.
We started talking about podcasts, actually. Because we've actually known each other for several years.
Yeah, five years at least. But we were talking about paranormal. And then we said something about a podcasting.
Yeah, we started talking about Bobby Lee and his podcast.
And then he started talking about, you know, some paranormal type stuff, podcasting. And I said, Travis, you do know I have a podcast, don't you? And he
looked at him and I said, shut the fuck up.
He kind of wigged out a little bit. And so I was just going to have him on the show as an interview, you know, just to talk about the paranormal. And then, you know, the more I thought about it, you know, why not just make it an everyday thing? So I said, Travis, would you like me, even before that first time, mm-hmm. I kind of said, do you want to make this an everyday thing or every week thing and just be my co-host? And we were off to the races. So alcohol and stupidity got this podcast rolling.
Alcohol, cigarettes, and just blatant jackassery.
But and see, that shows a prime example, though, of how hard it is to get an audience on a podcast. You guys were friends, and he didn't even know you had a podcast. You know, so that just goes to show how hard it is to even, you can try to put Facebook posts out and Twitter and Instagram and all that. And there's still a ton of people that have mm-hmm. no clue that that's what you do.
Well, and the thing was I've known him for years, but we were never like close buds. You know what I mean?
Well, we were acquaintances.
We met through, we had a mutual friend that Phil ended up dating for a while. And that's how we knew each other. So we knew each other in passing and we'd have conversations while they frequent the bar I work at. So we would have conversations there and then, you know, shit happens and starts hitting different fans in different places. And next thing you know, I'm taking a shot of cheap whiskey, high five and feel like, fuck yeah, man, let's go do podcasts together. Let's go be famous. Even though famous in my mind, if I get 1,000 views on an Instagram post, I'm like, dude, we're fucking famous.
But you know, and the reason he didn't know about it, cause I suck at self-marketing. and marketing probably in general. And he is 1,000 times better at that. And like, if you look at our social media, he pretty much handles most of the social media. It's 1,000 times better now than what, that's why I never heard of him, because I was kind of, nobody really knew in my immediate circle that I did it. I was bigger outside, you know, all of my listens and follows and stuff came from either out of the country or outside of, we're in Ohio. So, you know, outside of Ohio, I didn't brag about it to other people, probably because a little bit I was insecure and being new to it, only 2 years in, I thought I sucked. But he's a much better self-promoter than I am.
Oh, so. Yeah. Like he's because we're the perfect yin and yang. Like we have the same thoughts on a lot of stuff, but he's kind of a little more introverted and reserved. Whereas, you know, I got the bottle with me. I got my whiskey at all times. You can put two shots in me and I'm going to, okay. Do you know Phil's got a podcast? I'm going to be on Phil's podcast. Do you guys know he's got a podcast? Guess who's going to be on his podcast? Listen to the podcast. I mean, I'll sit at the bar. I've literally stolen my friends' phones and subscribed to the podcast and left a review on it just to be like, yep, there we go. Got that.
That's the way you do it. You gotta kind of force the hand sometimes. You guys still there?
Yep,
yeah,
we're here.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. I thought I might have lost you. Okay. So let's do this. Phil, we'll start with you.
Okay.
You and Travis also kind of do a little investigating on your own. So this has turned into a little more than just podcast buddies. What kind of places have you checked out? Have they been more of the bigger name places, or have they just been like people's houses and stuff that want you to come check it out?
Well, I started before Travis came along. I started out with a group. I found a group because I was doing the podcast and I started going out with them. I've been to Rawls Opera House in Cynthiana, Kentucky.
That's 30 minutes really from my house.
Yeah.
Well, we're actually going there again. Cause I was going to bring up when we go back, if you guys want to go,
matter of fact,
by all means,
I've been there 3, 4, 5 times. We actually recorded a episode from Rawls, but I've been the biggest one, most popular one I've been to was Thornhaven Manor in Indiana. It was on an episode of Ghost Adventures, which, you know, it wasn't all that. But I've been out to,
Iowa.
Yeah, Iowa. Was it Fair Elementary School?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I think. I've been Posttown Elementary up here in Middletown, Ohio. You know, I have not been to, I kind of steer away from a lot of the bigger places now, just because there's not, because I don't want to go. It's kind of commercialized now and, you know, it can get kind of expensive, you know, if you don't go with a group of 20 people. And I personally don't like to investigate with a group of 20 people. You know, for me, if I'm out investigating, I'd much rather have under 5. So those places can get a little pricey. So not that I wouldn't, but I just, you know, now if the podcast starts making a lot of money and I can afford to do that, I'll go anywhere. But
oh, hell yeah. We're not even paying for investigations. If we started making good money, I'm buying the Winchester house.
Yeah. But I have done a few private, you know, residential private investigations with that other team, which those are a lot more complex to do for the mere fact you're dealing with people and you have to not only investigate the home, but also investigate the person basically and get a read on them, whether or not, you know, you're getting the whole story or are they blowing things up. So that's a little bit more, it's harder to do, but like I love Rawls Opera House. I'd go there every month if I could.
It's a very unique spot because like I had never been there until I went there with him, and like he could tell you, like we could talk about my stuff later, but man, like there's just something about that place. Like I'm not even saying like nothing sensational happened while I was down there with him, but like as soon as I once I got away from everybody in that building, instantly for me, like little things here and there, and just an overall feeling in that place. But I don't know. I want to go back because there's too many people for me.
But that's the beauty of Rawls Opera House. You could go one time and get an abundance of activity or even evidence, or you can go back and really not get anything, or just get a feeling, a twinge, or a slight possible knock. It runs the gambit. And because I've been there and had lights turn on and off. I've gotten, you know, and you knowing the place, you know, the shadow man that walks between the bathrooms there in the auditorium. Mm-hmm. I've gotten a picture of that. And my first time there, I caught a picture, which there appears to be a shadow dark mass humanoid type between those bathrooms where it's reported to walk back and forth. Then I've been there and not got anything, just like a normal day at the park.
That place is out of every place that's around us, because we're within a good 3 hours of a lot of good places, but that place gets brought up more as the most active place that whoever has been to. It gets brought up more than Bobby Mackey's. It gets brought up more than Waverly. And considering the, you know, where we're at, it's amazing how many times that place just gets brought up. I mean, everybody just seems to have good experiences every time they go there. So it's just funny that it stands out. And people outside of this area within 3 or 4 or 5 hours probably have never even heard of the place. I hadn't heard of the place, but it's amazing how many people are like, no, that's the place to go.
Right.
Yeah. I had never heard about it until he brought it up. And then he started telling me about what happened with him. And I was like, well, fuck yeah, man, let's schedule that tour, or not tour, but let's schedule that lock in, if you will. And let's get some stuff done. Right. Now you're speaking my language here. I like getting drunk and talking shit with him and going to spooky places and doing dumb stuff that I probably shouldn't do, that a lot of hardcore believers in like the religious side of hauntings and the paranormal would say is putting myself at risk. But I've never been possessed by the devil, and I do all that dumb shit. It's never worked out badly for me.
Well, as long as it didn't happen to you, we should be good. So Travis, well, tell me about it. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say, if you do get possessed, make sure you do it on the live stream.
Honestly, with my behavior from time to time, I don't even know if you'd be able to tell.
So Travis, out of all the stories that you guys have covered on the show so far, what's been your favorite one that you've covered, or your favorite one that you researched?
Man, I haven't even been doing this that long, and that's a quite a library to go through, because I've got, you know how it is. Like, I've got notes in my phone and stuff like that for all kinds of things. I would say Project Bluebeam was one of the most fun to research.
And that's one I'm not familiar with. Tell me a little bit about that.
So Project Bluebeam was this cat named Serge Manast, basically wrote kind of like a manifesto, and it outlined a 4-step process by which the New World Order was going to take over the world. And it was things like, what was it? First, it was a alien invasion. Mm-hmm. And then at one point, they're going to project an image of every major religion's god into the sky and have them have that projection tell those people to follow the New World Order by whatever name it goes by. They're going to simulate massive worldwide earthquakes that reveal things that shake religion, so that then the New World Order can crush religion and take it over. And they're going to have fake alien invasions, all this stuff, basically just for the New World Order and or the Antichrist to come onto Earth and just kind of go, yep, this is our shit now, thanks guys. But it's just so out there. Like, it's out there, but it's not
inconceivable.
Once you really got into it, and it's not like mind blowing ridiculous to me.
It might have probably seemed like it 2 years ago, but after the last 2 years, anything goes.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they're out here putting 5G chips in people's asses and shit. Like,
yeah, I don't question anything any longer.
But yeah, that one was, I had a lot of fun with that one. I had a lot of fun with Skinwalker Ranch, but that was mostly just because of the TV show. I went off on a good rant on that episode about a couple of the characters on that show. I would say the most interesting one for me and for him was our first true crime
Was it the first one?
When we did the West Memphis 3.
It wasn't the first one.
Was it not?
No. Satanic Serial Killers was the first one.
Okay.
The West Memphis 3 was by far.
Like that's our first, as far as my involvement in the show, that's our only multi-part episode. And for somebody who's not as into true crime as I am, like Phil, this man didn't know anything about the West Memphis 3. And when I told him about it and he started to research it, he went more balls deep into this and got more emotionally involved with these dudes' cases than I was. And I, when that happened, I you know, I was just like, fuck yeah, man, let's get excited about this one.
Oh yeah, we did over 7 hours worth of, it's total 7 hours worth of
podcast. Plus I think we did a Patreon parts, too,
in three parts.
It got to the point where I came in for the third episode and we had been talking about it might run to four, and when I came into his house, he looked at me, he said, we gotta get this shit done. I can't have this one on my mind anymore. I think Phil was getting emotionally hurt by what happened to these young men. Well, they're not young men anymore, but
it just the emotion and what they went through, it just overcame me. I was like,
it was so much bullshit. Like, I don't know if you know anything about the case, but it was just, there's just actually a resounding pile of horseshit.
We did a long episode on it, and as a matter of fact, I actually had Damian Eccles set for an interview, and then he ended up backing out the day before the interview. So,
really,
yeah, I'm really, really well versed on the West Memphis 3. And matter of fact, when we just went to Texas, we went through West Memphis, and I made sure I took a picture of the sign saying "now entering West Memphis" just because of that. And then I got to go through Texarkana too, so I got to go through two places with the some good history when it comes to killers.
Yeah. And I think like Phil got into it because he started looking at it from the standpoint of you knew those kids in high school. You know what I'm saying?
I very easily could have been Damian Eccles.
And I was.
You know,
minus the murder charges, obviously.
I mean, the only difference between me and Damian is this. I went to football and played sports, and that kept me kind of out of going down that, I don't want to say loner path, but that path where you don't know where you belong. And because, I mean, hardships in life, very similar, you know. So, and I that's what probably got me so emotional about it, because I saw a lot of me in him, and I could have very easily been just like him and possibly end up in the same boat as him. Yeah. Spending what, 18 years behind bars.
Yeah, whereas like I had sports in my past and everything like that, but personally, as far as public perception of my peers and teachers and stuff like that, I was in the same boat. I was the weird kid that had, you know, hair past my shoulders and wore Motorhead t-shirts and combat boots that everybody thought was weird as shit all the time. I mean, they still do, but you know.
But the beautiful thing about that case is whether you think they did it or they didn't do it, there's something there for everybody, you know, and you can still take away, you should be able to take away from that story no matter which way you go or which way you lean in it. It's a touching story either way. It's tragic on every possible level imaginable.
Yeah, because I remember one of our biggest things was at the beginning, it was throughout that whole trilogy, if you will, one of our biggest things was, I always thought, I will still say to this day, that Jerry Driver is an absolute moron and a flaming pile of donkey shit when it comes to gathering evidence against somebody. But we made sure to also talk about the fact that at the center of this, the worst part for me, they may have got wrongfully accused, but the worst part for me was, let's not forget about the three kids. I kept making it a point to come back to that and not lose that within the story.
That was the biggest mistake that I made when I started researching for that episode, is I made the mistake of looking at the photos of the kids, you know, that they had taken down on the creek. And it's just like that. I couldn't get that out of my mind after seeing it.
Mm-hmm. That's why I warned him about that when I told him to watch Paradise Lost. I was like, dude, be ready for those opening credit scenes, because they are instantly going to smack you in the face with some shit that you probably don't want to see.
And you never, you even knowing about it, him telling me about it, you're still not prepared for that. When you actually see those opening credits, you're like, what in the hell did I just turn on?
Yeah, because they didn't hold back with those pictures. I'm surprised that the families allowed them to use those pictures.
Right.
But I mean, as shocking as it was, man, that brought a lot of eyes onto it, whether good or bad, depending on who was involved in the films.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because there was two of them, I think.
I think there's three.
Three now.
Was there three?
Is there three now? Yeah.
You're right, because they put the two came out long ago, and then the other one was an update after the fact. So
Mm-hmm.
So Phil, what's the one episode or one topic that stands out for you other than the West Memphis 3 one?
Wow. I would have to. Oh, that's so hard.
I know, right? And you've done way more episodes than I have. I'm
trying to think back on some of the older ones, but I.
So while you're thinking on that, I'll chime in with something else, because actually, should have said this a while ago, but Jason Baldwin is actually one of my Facebook friends right now.
Oh, really?
Really?
Cool.
Yeah.
I'd actually have to say this. You probably never heard of the asset. I did an interview with Keith. Oh, shit. I can't say his name now. He was from Ghost. Keith, I want to say Linder. Oh, shoot, I have his book in there. He was on Ghost Adventures.
Yeah, Keith Linder.
Keith Linder, yes. I interviewed him twice. Two different times. And that really opened my eyes to the paranormal celebrity world and how they treated him, watching that episode and talking to him, whether or not it was like, wow, these shows aren't what they say they are. And I actually kind of realized they can not into video that much. You can shape a story through just how you cut things, how you edit things and telling the story. And you could have two entirely different stories, or make it seem like there wasn't anything there when there might have been something there. And just the fact that they did not, you know, they always bragged about locking down and being there all night. They were only there, if I remember correctly, for like 3 hours.
Yeah, it's only a couple hours
on that front. Yeah, and I'm like, wow, of course you're not going to get anything. I've been to places where I've been 8 hours and not got anything, got something the ninth hour. I was like, and then to ring him through the coals like they did. Matter of fact, the second time I had him on is after they did the review of it. They watch it and talk about it again. Mm-hmm. I called him up, or I sent him an email. I said, hey, you want to come back on and talk about this again? But it's just his passion for it, and you know, he's and what he went through, and then even not backing down, bringing in the other, you know, people to investigate who did, you know, back him up and actually stayed there for weeks, I think 5-6 days at a time, you know, and, you know, got some good evidence. It just kind of opened my eyes. I always knew Zach was a little, the celebrity.
Egotistical.
The reality paranormal shows aren't based on, it's about entertainment, not about getting to the truth or finding, or even, it's not about the evidence. It's about just getting views and selling ad spots. That's why I like that episode the most, because that opened my eyes.
Yeah, one of your coolest stories is the Exorcist.
Oh, when I interviewed the demon.
Demonologist.
I did interview a demonologist.
Yeah, your story, like whatever it was with the audio interference.
Yeah,
the coolest story. I wish I was around for that, because that story, even if it's explainable by technological mishap, that story is cool as shit.
I interviewed, he wasn't a priest, but he was a demonologist. He was an exorcist. And I interviewed him for like 2 hours, and I broke it into two episodes. But during the editing process, there were some good EVPs that I actually had to call him up and say, hey, were your kids in the room? Was your wife there? Because there was some, I don't want to say, it seemed dark, or I hate to use the word evil, but there
malevolent.
Was, yes, there was something on my audio recording from that interview that I just couldn't explain, and it was weird. And you know, and given the subject matter that we were talking about, exorcisms and demons and you know, satanic right. rituals and all that stuff, it made it that much. Now, being that we were talking about like that I could be reading into it and hearing things, but it just made it weird. It was one of those I've never had to call a you know, interviewee back and say, what the hell is this about? Yeah. So that was an interesting one for me.
Yeah. He was on TV too, was he?
I don't, maybe.
I don't know. Those way before I came on.
I was trying to think of all the demonologists and stuff. I know James, then of course, Bishop Long. They're the only two to come to mind straight off the bat. So,
well, technically, see. Now you know Phil too. He's got well, the certificate. Go.
Hey, well, that was just for an episode. I wanted to research.
All right, guys, it has been an absolute blast having you on. Tell everybody how they can keep up with the show on social media and how they can tune into you.
What's the Twitter? Night_ghosts.
Yeah, Twitter night_ghost.
ghost_night_podcast on Instagram, GITN.podcast on Twitter or TikTok. We're on Facebook, just search Ghost of the Night.
And YouTube.
Just Ghost of the YouTube, Night. Yeah, YouTube, Ghost of the Night. We're pretty much on every streaming app that I know of, plus a shitload that I didn't know existed either.
Yeah, but Instagram's really the best way to
yeah, Instagram's the most direct way if you're trying to get a hold of us or communicate or anything like that. Just because I'm on Instagram all the time. So that's the best outlet to get a hold of us and actually speak with one of us.
So it doesn't matter.
What's that?
I'm on TikTok all the time, but that's
yeah, Phil's addicted to TikTok.
That's for a whole different reason.
Trying to learn those new trends.
Yes.
God, that's what I'm trying to do. I fucking suck at it.
Well, guys, it's been a blast having you on. We tell everybody, go listen to Ghost in the Night and leave them a 5-star review and tell them you heard about them on Hillbilly Horror Stories. Thanks, guys, and I'll be looking forward to seeing you in the future.
Thanks for having us.
All right, guys, so that was the guys in Ghost in the Night podcast. I will tell you ahead of time, probably should have said this in the beginning, but if you tune in, they do have some language, so they're not as family-friendly as we are. So just be aware. I don't want there to be any surprises.
Yeah.
But anyways, we appreciate you guys so much, more than you will ever know. Thank you for everything you do for us.
Absolutely. You guys are amazing, and I hope you all have a blessed week.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 5-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.